Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome Fargo-Moorhead right-hander Davis Feldman to the show. Davis, thanks for joining Kevin and I.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, Davis, first of all, talk about named not only by the league but by us today as American Association Pitcher of the Week. Incredible performance in that victory that you guys had, the 2-0 victory. Talk a little bit with us about that contest for you and how you felt about that start.
It was obviously a good game for us. But, you know, being the away team, the other guy pitches first, right? So I'm walking from the bullpen to the dugout as the first pitch is happening, and Evan Alexander hits it right into our bullpen, right over our heads, literally the first pitch of the game. So that was pretty cool. You know, the team starts us off getting hot, 2 runs in the first inning, and, you know, my job then is to kind of just hold that and throw strikes, and everything was kind of just working that night. So it was just a good night overall.
10-strikeout performance for you. They only looked like they had one inning where they were looking like they were threatening against you there in the second. But you looked in complete command at that game and have looked really in command all season long. Do you feel like this season things are really just coming together for you?
Yeah, I worked really hard this offseason. You know, last year kind of coming off of a decent year, and I worked really hard this offseason to better myself and kind of every facet of pitching and baseball in general. So it's nice that, you know, the hard work that I put in this offseason is kind of showing, but I feel really good. I think this is kind of just my start, to be honest. I feel like this is my third year in the league. I feel like I'm a completely different pitcher than I was when I first got in this league, and I feel like I'm going to just continue to get better. So, yeah, it was a good start, and good start to the season for me. So just trying to keep it rolling.
It does look like since you started in professional ranks a few years ago that every season you've just gotten better and better. And what do you attribute that continual progress and success to?
You know, I think just talking to guys, learning, just getting older, getting more mature, kind of understanding, you know, myself as a pitcher more, and really just, to be honest, just kind of settling into professional baseball. My first year, you know, you come out of college and it's just kind of a whirlwind at first. But then, you know, you learn from the mistakes, you learn from past experiences, and you kind of just take that into the off season and try and get better each and every day and each season. So I think, to be honest, I think it's just, you know, getting more mature, growing older, understanding myself more and just the game of baseball and how to pitch.
Now, last year you began in the bullpen, really took over that one of those starting positions in the rotation. Do you find the starting rotation is much more conducive to the way that you would like to attack hitters?
For sure. I mean, I was a starter in college as well, so that's kind of my forte, to be honest. And when I got here, being out of the bullpen was a little different for me. So starting is definitely what I'm more comfortable with. But, you know, I just like having a routine. I like, you know, I'm a huge competitor, so I like having the ball in my hand for as much as I can. So that's from the first inning to whenever Coaster, you know, takes the ball from me. So that's kind of what I like to do. So it's definitely what I'm more comfortable with. And, you know, last year, once I left the bullpen to the starting role, I think that's when I kind of started to, you know, take off really. And I think that's just because I like to start. So I think that's what I would attribute it to.
What's different for you in preparation between starting and relieving? I understand, you know, you know you're coming out there every fourth or fifth day as a starter, and that's a little bit different. But is there a different mentality for you that you found between starting and relieving and how you approached games?
Yeah, you know, I throw 5 pitches now. So, you know, coming out of the bullpen, you got to probably have all pitches ready to go right from pitch one. You know, starting's a little different. You got to work into the game. You know, you got to pitch guys differently the first time through the lineup, second time, third time through the lineup. So, you know, maybe some first time through the lineup, you try and save some pitches for for, you know, their next at-bat that they haven't seen yet. And you can kind of work the game a little better as a starter, but, you know, out of the bullpen, you got to be ready, kind of ready to go from pitch one, so.
Now, you had one of the guys who's been the most successful pitchers in American Association history, Kevin McGovern, there with you, and also working as your pitching coach. What's your relationship like with Kevin?
Me and Kevin are close, yeah. He's awesome. You know, obviously, he's been in this league a long time. He's, you know, the greatest pitcher in this league's history, most wins, most strikeouts. So, you know, just to pick his brain about, he knows all these hitters like the back of his hand. So, you know, just, you know, the day before my start, you know, for facing the team, just trying to pick his brain, see how he would pitch this guy. Just little things like that. It's, he's been a good sounding board for me, especially. So me and Kevin got a great relationship. He's awesome. We're super lucky to have him.
I'm curious, coming out of the college ranks, went to Eastern Michigan, as you mentioned, had a lot of success as a starter there. What was it like to move from you're pitching at Eastern Michigan, then all of a sudden you're starting for the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks? What was that experience like for you?
It happened pretty quick, honestly. You know, in Eastern Michigan, we're in the MAC, and they've got some pretty good ball players in the MAC. But, you know, coming here, didn't really know what to expect when I first got here. And then, you know, I get there game one, we're in Kane County. It's a Friday night. I think there's probably 10,000 people there. So it was kind of a little eye opening. You know, my first at bat was against, Casey Clemens, I believe, or Cody Clemens, one of the Clemens guys. But, you know, it was just kind of a, hey, welcome to it kind of moment. And, you know, was 23 years old at the time, a little young. You know, didn't really know. I was kind of like a deer in headlights, almost, kind of just trying to figure it out on the fly. And I think that's kind of why I struggled that first year. But it was definitely a different mentality for sure.
Now, this afternoon when Rob told me you were going to be on the show, the game that came up in my head was game two in Milwaukee of the the Miles Wolf Cup Finals. You know, going from there, it seemed like the rotation was McGovern, Brouwer, Wigginton, and then you were thrust into it after not starting quite a while. Explain what did you feel like going into the game? What was your mentality, and how did you feel knowing that you were able to get the Redhawks a split in Milwaukee and momentum going back to Newman Outdoor Field for game three?
Yeah, that was obviously a big moment for me. I think it was maybe towards the end of the regular season or the last series, the way the pitching was set up. Someone wasn't ready or something. And, you know, Anthony Renz texted me, I think the night before, or maybe two nights before, just saying like, hey, you got game two. And I was like, let's do it. Let's go. And, you know, I was just trying to make it another baseball game, just like any other game that year. You know, just having fun. It was nice that my mom came, so having her in the stands kind of calms me down a little bit too, kind of recenters me, and, you know, just not to make the moment too big. And, you know, so I just went out there trying to just throw one pitch at a time. You know, offense helped me out, you know, got the win, and it was a nice moment for sure after, you know, rough first year getting released, coming back the next year and, you know, getting a win in the final series for the team. So it was kind of a 360 moment for me, full circle moment, but it was cool. It was cool.
What was the mentality for you, or how were you feeling after that 2021 season when you clearly didn't feel you were getting your best performance out of yourself coming into 2022? What was kind of the thought process for you entering that season?
You know, I had to really look myself in the mirror after that 2021 season. I get released from Fargo, and then I go to Lexington Legends in the Atlantic League for about a month and get released from there as well. So I got released twice that first year, and, you know, it's kind of what do I want to do with my life? Got to reevaluate everything. And, you know, I told myself, I think I'm good enough to keep playing. And so I worked really hard that offseason to get better. And it's just kind of going into it like, hey, I got really nothing to lose at the beginning of the season. So I just went out and honestly kind of pitched like every game was my last because I kind of knew how that felt. You know, and I'm a really big competitor too, and I love to pitch. I love to compete. So, you know, it kind of had a little chip on my shoulder too going into last year. And but that's how I've always played. And but it was good. I mean, it was yeah, I don't know. It just meant a lot to me to go in there and try and, I guess, prove people that, you know, I'm a good pitcher and I'm good enough to play here.
Now, sorry that we're kind of skipping around here, but I'm looking at the box scores from the championship series last year, and you came in to relieve Kevin McGovern in that game five. I think that kind of gets lost because a lot of us remember the last few innings of the game, but you came in and stabilized things when McGovern just didn't really have it in that two-inning outing. Did you feel that? Did they tell you that, hey, you know, you're going to be the first guy up if McGovern struggles, or were you surprised to come in as early as you did in that game?
I kind of had an idea that I was going to throw that game, but definitely didn't think it was going to be that early. But, you know, I was ready from pitch one. So whenever my name was called, I was going to be ready to go out there. And kind of the same mentality as my start in game two, kind of just not make the moment too big and just kind of go out there like it's any other game, any other pitch, and just, you know, trust. We had Christian Correa back there. Just trust CeCe and the pitches he's calling, and honestly just control what I can control. So definitely was ready to pitch that game, but didn't think it was going to be that early in the game.
How did you feel after you came out of the game and all you knew you could do was just watch as that back and forth game moved on? I mean, just as a player, that's got to be just nerve wracking to watch it from the bench.
For sure. And there's obviously, I came out of the game, so there's no chance at all that I can go in and do anything. So it was even worse, but that was crazy. Like, I think I came out of the game when we were maybe up one or tied, and then we go down big, and it was kind of just super deflating. And then, you know, we come back, it goes to extras. It was just a roller coaster, but it was awesome. I mean, I got the best seat in the house to watch maybe the best baseball game in AA history, so it was pretty cool.
Now, starting staff this season, Peyton Wigginton released by the club, suffering a little bit of an injury that he's battling through. Correll Prime joins the rotation with you guys. You have Trent and Kevin there as well. Very interesting rotation for this season. How do you feel about this group and the overall performance for this year so far?
Yeah, we compete. You know, obviously, McGovern is who he is, and Grauer obviously had a really good year last year, and he's still throwing the ball well. And then we have Prime's awesome. He's like a sponge, man. He's always asking questions, always trying to learn and get better at pitching because he really cares about it. So it's fun watching him still develop as a pitcher. And you know, we got Jake Dykoff, who just came from college. He's been throwing the ball really well. I think he went five innings, no runs yesterday. So I mean, we might not have, you know, typical starters or guys that are, you know, typically pitching, but we compete, and we have the best defense behind us, obviously, and a really, really good lineup. So our job is just as starters is to keep the team in the game when we come out. So give our team a chance to win when we come out of the game is all you can ask for, and us five have been doing a pretty good job of that so far this year.
Five no-hit innings for Correll Prime. Have you guys nicknamed him Ohtani yet?
Oh, yeah, we got a bunch of jokes for him in the clubhouse and in the dugout so far. But, you know, that was awesome to watch him do that, especially against Milwaukee, who he played for last year. So, you know, maybe it meant a little more to him. But, no, it was fun. That was awesome to watch. And, you know, he's really good. So he's a good player both ways.
Who knew all that time he was with the Milkmen, he was actually studying his own hitters?
Exactly.
I think the interesting thing for you guys is that everybody expected this lineup to just come out and be hammering the ball every night, and it hasn't been as dominant and powerful as we've seen early on. Are you guys embracing the role of you've got to really shut opponents down because you can't expect six or seven runs out of your offense so far early on?
I don't think we're embracing that role because we know our offense can score 10 plus runs any given night, and we know it's still early in the year. We're only 15 games in, but we know some days we're not gonna do well, and we're gonna have to win games 10-8, and vice versa. So any given night, it's kind of just go out there and compete no matter what the score is, and let the chips fall where they may. But I don't know if we've embraced that that we gotta keep teams too low scoring. Just because it's still so early, and we know our offense is probably going to be the best in the league this year with, it's just still early, and it'll come around.
Now, I want to go back with you last season for just one other point here. You guys have that series in Kansas City. You dropped three of the four games there, and I think a lot of people around the league were a little skeptical about where this team was at, especially after Winnipeg goes up 1-0 in that series. How did you guys feel entering that series, and what do you do to overcome, like, hey, that series in Kansas City really didn't really mean anything to us?
Yeah, we were in first place all year last year, and last regular season game was in Kansas City. Winner won the division, and they won, and we watched them pop champagne on the field right in front of us, and after we lost that first game at our place, and then we had to go to Kansas City and win two games. We had a veteran group. We weren't really stressing, we weren't pressing, to be honest. We were just going out there to play baseball. We knew we had a good team, and if we played, our game, that we were going to have a good chance to win this series. And that's what happened, and, it's tribute to the coaches and just the type of guys we have on this team.
Kind of coming back to what Kevin was talking about, you in particular, is that you were put in some very important positions during the postseason last year, which I think says a lot about the confidence that both Anthony Rentz and Chris Coast had in you. But you look like you it really was any other day for you. I mean, were you that calm in your head as you were coming out for each of those contests in the postseason?
I want to say yes. Obviously, there's a little extra juice because it's the playoffs and stuff. But I was trying to be as calm as I could, and just control what I can control, trust the work I put in, and just try and do well for the team. To be honest, obviously, it's the playoffs. You got a little more adrenaline, a little more juice. But for the most part, yeah, I felt pretty calm out there.
It was really awesome to watch. I got to tell you, Kevin and I were for the whole championship series. We're there together, and we watched every one of the other games during this playoffs. And it was just so impressive to watch how you were just unbelievably poised. And I wonder, in college, did you have pressure pack situations like that, or is this just kind of your mentality to have a very calm, a dispassionate, I guess is the word I'll use here, attitude when you're out there pitching in such big games like that?
I think that's just kind of how I've always been. I've always been, a hard worker, kind of grinder type guy, and that just loves to compete and loves kind of any situation, whether that was football, basketball, baseball, any situation growing up. I just love to be out there and love to compete. So I think, my dad played college basketball, my mom played college volleyball and softball, and I was always around them growing up, and they were coaches, and I think that's just kind of how I was brought up and raised to play sports, is just give it everything you got and want to be in those big situations. So
this is a very interesting team. A lot of guys have been on the club for several years now. You got guys like Leo Pena, who's been there, I think, since 2017 or 18 now. It looks like a very close-knit group. What is the locker room like for the Redhawks?
It's the best locker room I've ever been in. You know, it's cliche that everybody loves everybody, but it's truly like everybody is a family in that locker room, and we're all rooting for each other, which is, you know, sometimes rare in this day and age. And everybody's super close on the team. We all go out to eat together, joke around, you know, all this stuff. So it's honestly been the best locker room I've ever been in. And it's a tribute to the culture we've created, and, you know, that's why we're pretty successful.
Off to a very fast start for yourself this year. As you have gone into your three starts this season, are you starting to set goals of what you expect the rest of this year is going to come down for you?
I have some personal goals, but to be honest, those goals just – those will come if I, you know, stick to my routine and put in the work. So, you know, if I stay grounded and just do what I can control, go out there and try and compete to the best of my ability and, you know, give the team a chance to win, those personal goals will come with that. So, you know, I just try and go out there and throw well and do what I can to give the team a chance to win. And, you know, just these three starts this year happen to be pretty successful. So, you know, just looking to just keep building off this and keep it going, to be honest.
Now, I know the ultimate goal is to get into affiliate ball there. And with the start that you're having, I'm assuming some scouts are taking a closer look. Are you given any kind of indication about that at this point?
Yeah, here and there. But, you know, it's obviously a goal of mine, and it's been the goal since I've, as long as I can remember, is to play in the major leagues. And, you know, I've put in the work and to hopefully give myself that chance. But in the meantime, I'm in Fargo and I want to be here. I love being here, and I'm just going to keep going out there and just trying to give the team the best chance to win.
With, so I mentioned quality pitchers yourself. I was going to say with, pitchers like yourself and Kevin McGovern and Tyler Grauer, do you guys have any friendly competition among the three of you? Is there any thing where, you know, a guy throws a really good game, you want to go out to the next night and top it? What's the relationship within the rotation itself?
For sure. Actually, after my start in Lincoln, my last start, Kevin McGovern came up to me and said, 10 strikeouts? All right, looks like I got to beat that. So, you know, it's just little stuff like that. We try and joke around with each other and, you know, a little friendly competition, and because we like to push each other. And, you know, Reed Brillingmeyer the other day in Lincoln hit 100 miles an hour. And I was like,
wow.
All right, Reed, like, I got to go out there and try and hit 101 now, like joking around. So the pitching staff is super, super close, and we push each other. And, yeah, it's all fun and games, but we like to push each other and have some fun.
Brillingmeyer has really gotten off to a great start himself this year. I'm wondering when Alex DeBoer comes back, it could be a battle to see who's going to be the closer.
Yeah, that's not up to me or my decision, but those guys are both really, really good pitchers, and Reed's doing well while Alex is getting ready. And you know, that's not up to me. They're both really good, and they both deserve it, to be honest. So trust both of them back there, and whichever one's out there, I know they'll get the job done.
I'd say that had to be a pretty fun decision to have to make, picking between the two of them. You're not going to go wrong either way.
Yeah, I don't think either choice is a bad one. So that'll be a fun conversation for Coast and Renz and McGovern.
I would think it's got to be a lot more comforting for you guys in the starting rotation, because I you know, kind of looking into the start of the season, there were some question marks about how you got from the sixth inning to Alex DeBoer in the ninth. And Tanner Riley has been great for you guys. I mean, you're just getting fantastic performances out of your entire bullpen. You guys got to feel really good about when you come out of games that your wins are still coming your way.
Oh, for sure. You know, that's kind of what we built this team on last year, late in the year, is our bullpen. So, you know, having the trust in those guys when we come out of the game to get us to those back end guys is really comforting, and, you know, have all the trust in the world in all those guys. Like you said, Tanner's having a really good year, and and Reed and, you know, all those other guys. So it's been good and super confident in those guys and super super calming to know when I come out of the game that, you know, we got a good chance to hold this thing.
How are parents like in your early success this season?
Good. You know, they're trying to keep me humble. But, no, they're happy. And, you know, I'm from Michigan, so the first 3 weeks so far have been in that East Division, Chicago, Milwaukee. So I got to see them a couple times early this year, which is super helpful and nice and good since, you know, I'm up in Fargo from Michigan. It's not super close, so it's nice to go on that East Division trip and see the family. And we're going to Lake Country next week, so I'll get to see them again next week. And it's good. It's you know, they're super supportive, and just I appreciate them a lot.
You guys kind of had an odd little road trip where you started out in the East and then played three in Lincoln and then backtracked again for three more.
Yeah, it was,
how was that?
it's long. It's a long road trip. You know, we're 15 games in and only had three home games so far. So we like to call ourselves the Roadhawks instead of the Redhawks. But yeah, that was a long trip going from Fargo to Chicago to Lincoln, back to Milwaukee, back to Fargo last night. So it was long, but you know, that's where we like to have fun as a team and bond on those long bus trips. And you know, as long as we get our business done and win games, it's all good fun.
You know, and I just want to clear this up while I got both you guys on here. Last week on the show, I was giving Josh Buchholz some pretty good-natured ribbing about the schedule and that kind of a road trip you guys had to go on. But I was informed this year, for the first year, Buchholz did not write the schedule. So I want to just publicly clear his good name. And it was someone, they farmed out the schedule to somebody else, and that's what happened. It was not a Josh Buchholz production. So there.
You guys at least get a long stretch of home games here. I mean, and your only real road trip over the next few weeks is heading to Lake Country. So favorite restaurant to travel to when you're in town there, Davis?
Ooh, up in Fargo?
Yes.
There's this place called South Town Poorhouse. It's pretty good. You know, it's kind of just like a little bar and grill sports bar place. We usually get that a lot. They got some really good Philly cheesesteak egg rolls.
Ooh.
I like to get those things. They're really good.
I need some help because all I've discovered up there is the red pepper.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I've heard about that place.
Well, what are you kind of looking in these series now? Sioux Falls comes to town, then you have Lincoln, then you head out to Lake Country, Chicago, who's playing very well right now, then Kansas City. Mm-hmm. It looks like you have the series get a little stronger with each one coming up here pretty soon. So what do you think about the team and prospects for repeating as champions this year?
Yeah, we got a really good team this year. You know, we lost a couple guys from last year's team, but we brought in some guys that are contributing and will be just as good. And, you know, just trying to put it all together. It's still early, but, you know, we got as good a chance as anybody to make a run and try and repeat this thing. And that's our goal, obviously. So, you know, if we just play our game that, you know, we're going to be a tough team to beat. So trying to just go out there every night and just play Red Hawk baseball, because Red Hawk baseball is winning baseball. So that's just our goal every night, and not worrying about looking ahead, just kind of taking each day as it is and going out there and trying to play well.
Are we doing a segment tonight, Kevin?
I don't have anything for tonight. Sorry, guys.
Okay, that's fine. No worries. I just want to check to make sure. I tried to get out here. So awesome. So, Davis, Kevin and I greatly appreciate you joining us here tonight. So since you're a first-time guest, you get to know that you get to give us a final thought. So whatever you'd like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Baseball wise or anything?
Anything
you'd like to talk about.
All right. I'm the biggest diehard Detroit Lions fan. We're winning the NFC North for the first time in a long time this year. And we're going to make a run at the Super Bowl. Go Lions, baby.
Love that. Davis Melton, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Appreciate it.
Well, Kevin, great having Davis on. First time guest is here tonight. And boy, he's off to a fast start this season.
He definitely is. And that's a dangerous trio of starters with that Fargo-Moorhead club with Grauer, McGovern, and Davis Feldman. So if all three happen to stick around and not get signed, that's going to be trouble for the rest of the West Division going forward this season.
Yeah, you know what? In that game, Kevin, he showed that he can go out there and battle. 122 pitches in that game. So struck out 10 batters, allowed just 3 hits in the contest. So fantastic performance by Davis, well-deserving of the Pitcher of the Week, as we mentioned, both by the American Association and by us, chosen for that. As you talked about, Fargo has got finally seeing an end to this long road trip to begin the year out there. And you got to feel 9-6. You're in really good position if you came away with that so many road games and you're still 3 games above 500.
I think so, because as we well know, that you know everything averages out in the end, and there will be a pretty big stretch of home games for this team. And as anyone that has followed this league for any amount of time knows, I don't care if Fargo was struggling or they're the best team in the league, it is not easy to win games at Newman Outdoor Field. If you win a game up there, you've earned it, because there is just some mystique about that ballpark where there is never a lead safe up there. And I don't know what it is. I know it's a lot of talent with the Redhawks, but there's just something about Newman Outdoor Field that is just hard as heck for road teams to go in and get victories.
Well, this team is getting some very interesting contests. As you talked about, Carell Prime throws 5 no-hit innings in his last start. A guy who struggled out of the gate but has really maybe turned the corner for this club. And now we're not just looking at a big 3. We could really be looking at a big 4 for this club.
Yeah, boy, what a combo. You know, Prime can be a steady 4 starter for this club. And, you know, you got that coming every fifth day, and then you got his bat in the lineup all the other days. That's, you know, the trade, getting Prime back from Milwaukee, getting his roommate Dylan Thomas to join, and then now you're getting a two-way player out of Prime. The trade's looking better and better for the Redhawks.
Yeah, still struggling a little bit offensively. Manuel Boscan, the only one, is showing Manuel Boscan-like numbers so far. 349 at this point, but a lot of these guys hitting around 200 or lower. Leobaldo Pena at 207, John Silviano 216. But as you mentioned, Kevin, these are the Redhawks, and you know these guys are going to hit at some point. So if there's bad news for American Association opponents out there, it's that this team is still winning and not even hitting yet. So it's going to be a scary club, I think, over the next few weeks.
I think so. I don't see those guys' averages staying down that much for very long.
Well, let's talk about the team leading the West Division right now, Kevin, and that's the Sioux City Explorers, who had the Player of the Week as Matt Lloyd, chosen by both us and the American Association, after an impressive 545 week, led the American Association in batting average, slugging percentage, on-base percentage, obviously OPS with those two categories you're leading in, and was second in RBI, first tied for first in runs scored. A well-deserving performance from a guy who is, you know, leading the Sioux City offense right now.
And, you know, like we talked about, this wasn't a highly heralded ball club when the season began. But, boy, you get a performance like that out of Lloyd in the last week. But it's hard to say of the Sioux City team, because, you know, they go into Kane County and sweep the Cougars, but they were in Sioux Falls for three and then home for three against Lincoln. And for the week, they went 2-4. So, you know, it's hard to really get a finger on the pulse of this team, but, you know, big picture, they're, I believe they're 10-5. So I think you got to take that and run with it. And it's overall, it's a very good start. And yeah, Matt Lloyd, in that third base spot, he might just make people forget about Jose Sermel eventually.
I think you're right about that. And what's interesting about this club, Kevin, talking about the losses that they've had, you know, the one victory they have in Sioux Falls, they went 17-7. The one victory they had against Lincoln, a 16-5 victory. And you go, wow, well, this team can really produce some runs. But three of those four losses this week were when they scored three runs or fewer. And I think that's the offense we expect out of this group. So if they don't get spectacular pitching, you feel like they're going to really struggle, but they are getting that pitching. So, you know, I think that this club is going to be fine, that they understand they're going to have to win a lot of 4-3 and 4-2 games this season.
But then you throw in that mix, they lose a 10-9 game. So, you know, what do you say? Baseball.
Yeah. It's a very weird team out there, but you can't argue when you're out there 10-5 already. So you're playing solid baseball, holding off the defending champions right now. So we'll stay in this division right now. Jump down here to the Kansas City Monarchs, Kevin, two games out behind Sioux City right now. They after a very tough start, they look like they've righted themselves a little bit here. 7-3 over the last 10. Chris Herman has been fantastic for them. This is a club I think we were expecting to see, this Monarchs finally getting back to playing Kansas City Monarch baseball.
It is. They had a bit of a hiccup in Oconomowoc yesterday, losing 11-2 to the Dachshunds, but in general, they looked very good against Milwaukee. Had a thrilling 11-10 game last Wednesday night that got started a little late due to rain, but then they went on to Lake Country, won the first two before losing the finale. So, you know, overall, it's a 4-2 week. So, you know, you say if you win series, every series, in the end, you're going to be just fine.
As Kevin and I are talking here tonight, they are currently losing to Lincoln 7-3. This is a team right now that I look at and I think to myself, you know, you're getting a fantastic performance out of Chris Herman. Gavin Collins has been fantastic at the top of that order. Is it Johannes Ways Fargas? Am I saying that right? Even remotely right? I hope I am.
Yeah, close enough.
All right, my apologies. It's playing very well for them, but I feel like there's a big drop-off to this club after you get past that top four in the batting average, with Justin Wiley also playing very well for them. John Hernandez, not what we normally have seen from him early on, Kevin. And they Gio Brusa out with the club now, and it's like I'm not really sold on this offense, I guess, at this point.
I'm not either. And Jacob Robson, who was a huge addition for them last year, has not got the job done yet. Batting .229, but he does have three homers, but you know, you talk about Hernandez, 44 at bats and not a single homer and only five runs batted in. And anyone that follows the This Week in the Association Facebook page, you know, they will know that there is some stuff out there right now off the field that may be a bit of a distraction for Hernandez. So we'll see how that all unfolds as the weeks and months go on. And, you know, Keon Broxton, another guy that, you know, they thought was going to put up huge numbers. He struggled a lot with St. Paul in 2021, and I have my doubts about it when I think he was out of baseball for a year, and then he came back to the Monarchs. And so far, Broxton and 53 at bats and struck out 21 times. And, you know, when he signed with the Monarchs, I was talking with Sean Aronson with St. Paul about it. And he said that Broxton hardly ever struck out. So, you know, to see those kind of strikeout numbers, in a limited amount of at-bats. That's a little bit alarming.
Yeah, it looks like we're not – doesn't have that batter's eye going for him right now. So, I have a feeling that Joe's a very loyal guy, manager Joe Capapietra, very loyal guy to his team out there, and will give people a shot. But he's also a guy that wants to win. And I have a feeling that if this team is, you know, one or two games above 500, 2 or 3 weeks from now, we're going to be starting to see some fairly dramatic changes here. So, Joe will
do
that.
It's tough because you don't want to give up on a guy and then he goes somewhere else in the league and then shoves it up your rear by getting hot all of a sudden. So, you know, you have to tool that line between being loyal to your guys and then maybe being a little too quick to give up on them, and then they go somewhere else and have success. So, you know, you have to find that medium at somewhere there. You know, the thing I think is a little troubling about Kansas City, too, I'm not sold on their pitching. Their staff right now has got a 5.5 ERA. A guy like Brandon Finnegan, who we thought would dominates this league. He's doing okay, 4.2, and I believe he got injured. I'm not totally sure on that.
Yes.
But the
this one on the DL.
You know, there's really you know, you look at the guys that have started for them. Deason's got a 3.29 ERA, Finnegan's at 4.2, but boy, after that, Singer 7.8, Moats 8.35, Jalen Miller ERA of 9. That's, you know, how many starts do you give a guy before you figure out that I might want to move on and give someone else a shot? You know, that's why these managers get paid like they do, to make those kind of decisions. So we'll see what happens with that pitching staff, because I got to imagine with a 5.5 ERA that Calvapietra is not going to just sit around and wait for something to happen.
You know, another dynamic to this too, Kevin, is that this is a place that over the last couple of years has seen some rather rapid decline in attendance. And, you know, I know talking with some people out Facebook and stuff were sending me messages in the off season about what is this Kansas City lineup going to look like? And there was some concern, you know, you don't have all the big names that they've had over the last couple of years. And Chris Herrmann is obviously a huge pickup. And like you said last week, he might be out the door pretty soon, as an affiliate club's going to be looking for a catcher to bring him in. But I start to wonder is that if you're a Monarchs fan, you know, are kind of wondering what's going on here, you might be like, well, I don't know if I really want to get involved with this team. So I feel like the team needs to start making a drastic move here in a week or two if things don't start getting a little more successful for the club, because you're just trying to ensure you keep people interested in your club.
Well, you know, last year it was such a strange year because you had guys that were back from the championship team that Gabby Guerrero, you know, Yan Hernandez, I get it, he's still around, but there were other guys, too, that were Girl John was back from the championship club, and I'm sure there were others. But when
James
you
McGrain, guys like that.
Yeah. So your team kind of had an identity in guys that they knew, and then you throw in a Pete Cosma and a Matt Adams. You know, the team had recognition from not just the Kansas City fans, but, you know, from baseball fans in general, and you had that last year. You fell one game short of being in the championship series. If you beat Fargo, you're going to the championship series. Who knows? Maybe we're talking about Kansas City repeating as champions. It doesn't happen. Now there's a lot of roster fluctuation, and you know, let's be really honest, the turnstiles are not clicking right now in Kansas City. I have never seen it this bad with this franchise. Folks, do yourself a favor. Go on American Association Baseball. You can go back and track attendance for like the last, I think, ever since the team was in the American Association. This is a team that once drew 5,000 fans a night. And now, you know, we saw some attendance numbers where it was just barely over 1,000 fans. You know, yeah, they packed the place for the Savannah Bananas, but, you know what, they're a novelty act. They're going to draw wherever they go. But this is a ball club right now that just isn't catching the interest of the local fans. And you just kind of wonder, where is this team going to go? Granted, we're talking about a team that, my God, they're in second place, aren't they? Second or third?
Yeah, third, right here. Tied for third.
Third, but it just doesn't seem like the Kansas City Monarchs team that we've gotten used to.
Yeah. I agree, and I understand. And we'll talk. You and I will talk about this here in a little bit. But I understand that home runs are down. You and I were not surprised by that at all. We thought this was going to be where pitching was going to be better this season, and where we weren't going to see the dramatic home run numbers. It might be Josh Altman is the only guy who hits around 25 this season right now. If Herman sticks around, he could reach that mark as well. But I don't think we're going to see any really gaudy numbers this season. So this is an opportunity to really, find other ways to attract a fan out to a game, because they're probably not going to see a lot of 9-8 games at Legends Field this year. And they're not going to see Kansas City blasting 165 home runs this season. So as you're talking here, 1,109 fans per game Kansas City is averaging, third worst in the American Association right now. And I think it's important, Kevin, that you and I come out and say openly, part of our harping on attendance is we're concerned for the longevity of a club. Hey, and Sioux Falls is struggling in attendance. There's going to be a team there as long as there wants to be a team there, because that's just part of the Sioux Falls fabric. They're going to get a new stadium. But we look at Kansas City here, and you kind of wonder, because of its location, you know, that somebody else is going to want that stadium at some point if they're not drawing really well. And you know, so fans, you really got to get out to this game, or you're going to be maybe missing a team and have a new shopping mall right there or something.
The part I'm afraid of, and I think in the ownership group, I know they're doing what they can to, honestly, you know, when you run a business, your goal is to turn a profit, right? Or at least break even where you can afford to pay your employees and give yourself enough money to live on. It just seems like they're having the bank on having concerts and the two or three games of the Bananas and this Tacos and Tequila Festival thing going on again there this year. At what point do you think, hey, why are we sinking money into this team that's drawing 1,200 fans when we can just have festivals every weekend that are going to draw full houses and put us in the black? So, you know, I hope the level of commitment with this ownership group is what we thought it was when they bought it from the previous Kansas City T-Bones. So I hope they're in it for the long run, but boy, if they're not drawing fans, you know, what's their motivation for keeping it going? I know when we talked to Mark Brandmeier, he said, I don't want this. I bought this team because I didn't want to see another Kansas City Kings fiasco where we lost a sports franchise. But Mark Brandmeier is also a businessman, and the goal of any businessman is to turn a profit. And how many years can you lose money on a team before you think, I can do something better with this money? You know, we thought that the association with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum was going to be more fruitful, but it's kind of like, the impression I get is like, we're the Monarchs in name only. You know, I know you and I we're marks for Dan Vaughn, okay? I'm not going to make no secret about that. And what happened in Kansas City, I wrote about it. Everyone that knows me knows what I felt about it. Dan Vaughn was the main person that tried to tie anything to do with the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum and the old Kansas City Monarchs into the current ball club. With the work he did, every night you learn something about the old Kansas City Monarchs. And to me, it's just like promotion. You can't just call it a cowboy night at the ballpark, wear cowboy hats, and expect it to get over. And likewise, you can't just slap Kansas City Monarchs jerseys on players and not live the gimmick, not tie in the Negro League Baseball Museum. I know they've had Bob Kendrick out there. I know we've talked to a few people involved in the museum, but I just feel like there's got to be more involvement than that if they want this thing to work out in the long run.
I think you're absolutely right. And let's also consider, too, that a couple of years ago when COVID was going on, when they made some major renovations to that stadium, too. Beautiful place to go watch a game. I mean, come on now. I mean, if you don't want to sit in the stands, you can sit down there on the grass around the outfield there, and you're pretty likely to get a home run ball at some point by the way that that ballpark plays. Beautiful view no matter where you sit. Fantastic food that they have right there. It's a great place to watch a game. And even if you're not a Monarchs fan, you just like to sit out in the sun and enjoy a nice day of doing something fun. That's a great place to go out to. So I hope this turns around, Kevin. You know, it's a conversation you and I bring up every year. But
I have a question, too, of their decision-making as far as their broadcasts go, that there's no home radio or streaming broadcast for home games. So that's half of your games. You've got no way of watching or listening to it unless you are at the ballpark. And I get it, you know, there's back in the old days, mentality was that you didn't want to give away the product. You didn't want to show home games on TV. You wanted to get them out to the ballpark. But, you know, that went away in the 60s and 70s. It's not like that anymore. You know, if I'm a baseball fan in Kansas City and half the games of the season I can't watch or listen to unless I pay for an American Association baseball subscription, if I can't go on my computer and listen to the game, if I can't drive somewhere in my car and pull up the game on the radio, I'm likely to not even be thinking about this ball team anymore. What does that even say? You know, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. A lot of teams look like they're making that choice too, Kevin, that they're just going strictly to AA baseball to have stuff broadcast and not providing some other kind of alternative. And, you know, no offense to the American Association or any other league out there, but there's only one league that can get away with stuff like that right now, and that's the NFL. You know, so people will pay to watch whatever the garbage that they're showing. But
most other teams are at least providing a MixLR stream, and
yeah,
the Monarchs are only doing that half the time. And yeah, I get it. You know, King County and Milwaukee also aren't sending people on the road, and I don't agree with that either. And you know, you and I talked about that before the show. Give an intern a chance and send them on the road and let them learn the ropes. So I don't know how decreased exposure to the team is going to be a good thing in the long run. Someone's got to explain that to me.
And Kevin and I are going to talk more about this particular subject here in a little bit on the show, but let's continue to quickly go around the rest of the league out there, Kevin, and jump out there to the Winnipeg Gold Eyes as they have a nice week, 4-2, and they're taking 2 of 3 from both Sioux Falls and King County. This is a team that, you know, got off to a little bit of a tough start, came home, handled their business out there, which they usually are very good up there in Shaw Park. And looks like fans are really embracing Greg Taggart as their manager out there. And the club, I think, is in a very solid position early on here.
I think so. You know, you look at the stats, and even with Max Murphy off to a slow start, and frankly, you know, the offense is only hitting .235, which is a little bit alarming. But, you know, they've found a way to get timely hits and find ways to win games. So it's worked out so far, but, you know, let's see how this all plays out in the long run, because, you know, you look at your looking here, like four regulars are hitting 270 or better, and then after that, it drops off quite a bit. But it just always seemed like, you know, you watch Winnipeg highlights, and there's always somebody getting a clutch hit when they need it. So, you know, I think that just says a lot to guys buying into the team concept.
One thing I really like about this club, Kevin, and I'm gonna call this the Greg Taggart effect at this point, but Luis Ramirez had a just a terrible August and into September last year, and it looked like he got off to a very tough start this season, but fantastic in his last start, then came out of the bullpen yesterday when Travis Seabrook had to leave early and was fantastic in seven innings for them. Just phenomenal. RJ Martinez, he moved into the bullpen, has been very solid for him there too. I feel like Taggart has really developed a sense of what he wants out of this pitching staff, and they're responding to that. And I think that's a big reason why this team stays very competitive, because the offense may struggle for this club, but I feel that they're going to get some very solid pitching.
Yeah, you look at the staff ERA overall is right at 4, and you know, in a hitter's league like this one, that's pretty impressive. But, you know, I was watching last Thursday afternoon, and a guy like Tyler Janrin, he looked very good to me. He's only had two starts. He beat Fargo in his first one, and three runs in seven innings against Kane County, but gets the hard luck loss. He's thrown well. Landon Barasa has thrown well in his three starts. So, you know, I think the pitching overall looks pretty decent. It's just a matter of can the batters have that clutch hitting that they're going to need, being a team that does not have a high team average? Can the batters be clutch throughout the year when they need them to, or eventually is the luck going to run out?
Yeah, and we saw last year was that it was the pitching that was struggling for this club and kind of ruining some fantastic performances by guys like Murphy and David Washington. So you got to get a little more consistency from that offense for sure. Kevin, let's drop here to the Lincoln Salt Dogs, four games out in this division right now. They have a bit of a tough week for the club out there. Dropped 2 of 3 with Fargo coming to town, then travel out to Sioux City and take 2 out of 3 from the team with the top record in there. So turn things around as the week's going along. They're a group that looks like they're getting some very solid pitching and a few guys out there that are hitting very well for them early on.
Yeah, you know, the bats, you know, your top batter right now is Drew Devine, who we saw him in 2021 in a very limited role make quite an impact. He only played 33 games last year, but made a good showing for himself. But now getting a chance to play every day, he's making the most of it, hitting .365. So that's got to be a good sign for Lincoln, and you just hope that other guys jump aboard and feed off of that. You know, Luke Roskin behind home plate, he's been an offensive force, already driving in 15 runs. And, you know me, I always got to be partial to the Minnesota guys. He's from Chaska, Minnesota, so got to support the local boys.
I got to say, I'm feeling pretty good, because in my 23 questions to be answered this season, before the season got underway, I had Drew Devine as the player to watch this year. I get a little pat on the back, at least early on here. Now I doomed him, probably, is the way it's going to be looked at here. But Lincoln, what I find interesting, Kevin, is getting a solid pitching performance from this group, but the rotation has really not come around for them. I think this bullpen, with a couple, you know, last week you and I were talking about Matt Cronin was struggling for a little bit. Stephon Moore got out of the gate a little tough. But it looks like all of a sudden things have turned for them a little bit. Now, I don't mean to, you know, be a little bit too excited about 1 week, but I feel like all of a sudden this group has got it. And if they at least can get a solid 4 or 5 innings out of this bullpen on a regular basis, this is a team that's going to be battling at least for a playoff spot, I would guess.
I think so. You look at Matt Cronin and his early struggles were documented, you know, 8 earned runs and 1.2 innings of work. But, you know, his last three outings, scoreless inning in each and got the save in Sioux City on Friday night. So, you know, maybe they found something that Cronin was doing mechanically that was just off, and it looks like he's got it back together. And Stephon Moore is starting to look like the Stephon Moore of the first half from last year, you know. 7.1 innings and struck out 13 batters already. And he also has a save. So, you know, if you can get Matt Cronin and Stephon Moore pitching like we know they can, that's a great back end of the pen.
And as Kevin and I are talking, they're leading Kansas City 7-3 right now in the top of the fifth inning. So looking to go 4-1 in their last five games if they can hold on to that victory. Let's talk about the last team in this division, Kevin, the Sioux Falls Canaries. 6-10, you know, 3-7 over their last 10, but I feel like this club is starting to look better. They did have a lost 2 out of 3 to Winnipeg, took 2 out of 3 from Sioux City when they came to town, but they lost in Winnipeg. I never feel like a team should hang their head low when you lose 2 out of 3 games in Winnipeg. So 3-3 in their last 6, they go this last week, Kevin, and you know, maybe they're starting to feel the heat out there and going, okay, we better start getting some things together before some people are talking about breaking up this club.
And I think with a team like Sioux Falls that has struggled, I mean, staff ERA of 8.16, I know it's early, but at this point, do you chop that division in half? And do you worry a little more about just getting in the top four as opposed to worrying about what's happening with first and second place in this league? And I just think that, you know, just set your goals small, hit those, and then once you hit those, then you start worrying about what's going on way at the top of the division. But I think you're right. I think Sioux Falls has made a much better showing of themselves lately, and I think that's got to bode well for the stretch coming up because, you know, to finish off the road trip, they got to play 3 in Fargo and then come back home and play a Gary South Shore team that hasn't lost a series this year. I don't think so. Did they lose 2 out of 3 to Kane County?
They did this weekend. Yes, they did. Yeah.
Okay, so their 2 out of 3 mojo was lost. But still, I mean, Gary South Shore's off to a really good start, so I think it'd be big for this club to, you know, have a nice 3-3 week and just feel like, hey, you know what, we can still be a factor in this division.
Yeah, and I think you're talking about the most important thing for them in particular is to say to themselves, we just got to try to get some consistency going here. You know, like you talked about, you're having a tough week in Fargo, and that's not an easy place to win at Newman Outdoor Field. So if you come away with one victory out of this, you go, okay, again, you like playing Winnipeg. Okay, we took one game here. If you take 2, you go, man, that was a heck of a week for us there. And then you have Gary that's coming in there for 4, and you go, okay, well, let's at least get 2 out of this and try to get 3. And if we can go 5-2 this week, man, this could be a big difference. Or even 4-3, this could be a big difference for us. So I think if you're Sioux Falls, you say to yourself every week you got to be one game above 500. You got to try to shoot for that. And see if you can start chipping away so you get one game closer to a fourth place and a third place, you know. And there's the keys there. I mean, there's pieces there, Kevin. Ty Culbreth, you know, is going to be better. I mean, the guy's proven he can pitch in this league, and they got a heck of a group of hitters there. So, and that bullpen looks good. Looks very good. So you got to feel like this team has the pieces to compete. Am I wrong on that?
6 batters with 10 RBIs or more. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think so too.
Looking at 8 guys are batting, at least have played at least 11 games, are batting better than 270. So I don't think the offense is not going to be a problem. It's just going to be in, gosh, how many years in a row have we said this for Sioux Falls? It's, you know, who's gonna get the outs? Who's gonna get the 27 outs every night? And that's gonna be the key. And you know, you've seen a lot of guys already been five guys I'm looking at have been released by the club already. So I think it's a good sign that Mike Myers just not gonna stand pat. And watch his pitching staff get clobbered. I think he's going to look around and try to find guys that can fill in and find that right chemistry with your pitching staff where they can be a contender in this league.
Well, Kevin and I will combine these two teams together as we shift to the East, and that is that the Chicago Dogs who jump into the top spot in this division after going down there to Cleburne and just handling business, taking five of the six games, won the first five games of that series. I'm getting the big middle finger from the Chicago Dogs right now because they're proving to me, Rob, you don't know anything. Because man, this team is really impressive early on here. You got to like what they're doing.
Crazy to think that I think we both had them not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I know. I had them last.
I did not see this team as one that was going to go, especially the way Cleburne was playing. I didn't see this team as a team that was going to go down there and take five out of six games, and most of the time doing it in pretty dominating fashion. It just defies logic. Look at the batters. There's only four guys that are hitting above 264. You don't have your Grant Case. You don't have your Casey Hobsons anymore. Josh Altman's just been, I think he's been the savior for this offense. It's been Altman and Ryan Lidge, and then after that, it's like, gosh, just try to get on for those two guys.
And you know, Kevin, this week, that group finally started to come together, too, because, you know, look over the last 7 days, seven guys, hit better than 300, who had at least 21 at-bats. You know, that's your primary part of your starting lineup. It was only Nicholas Heath and Luke Mangieri who struggled this year. I struggled this week. So they were getting just spectacular hitting 1 through 7 or, you know, 1 through 6 and 8 or something like that in their lineup. And a guy like Matt Mulcher, you know, he's a guy that really has had a huge impact on this lineup and has been helping to set the table for Altman, who's the MVP right now, as far as, you know, that I see. This guy has been the savior of, as you said, for the Chicago Dogs. And, man, what a turnaround for him. I mean, I'm loving seeing what he's doing for this club right now. And I don't see any cool down for him at this point. So they're getting decent enough pitching. The bullpen has looked good. Brian Schlitter is pitching well for them now all of a sudden. Tyler Palm is ridiculous early on. Tyler Palm, Trevor Lane, and Jake Dahlberg, Kevin, have three guys with ERAs under 1.55. I mean, you're going to win games like that.
Yeah, you just took my next thought. You know, look at their stats. And that is crazy to have three guys all with three starts each, and the highest ERA among the three is 1.55. Yeah, you're going to win a lot of ball games with that kind of starting pitching. And Jonathan Cheshire had two saves out of the bullpen, and then Brian Schlitter, a guy from last year, has three out of the bullpen. So you got multiple guys. I guess you can go to the ninth inning. So Jonathan Tripp, a guy we've always been high on, has struggled at 8.59 ERA, but we know that he'll get on track too. So I think obviously the message that Chicago sent in early is that, hey, you know what, we're going to have good pitching and, you know, hope the bats can get enough done for us to get wins. And obviously it worked very good last week in Cleburne and all season in general.
Going the opposite way, Kevin, Cleburne comes in last week as the top team in the division, and I understand it's early on, so, you know, I don't want to get too crazy about a team dropping a few spots in the standings. But, wow, this was a team that struggled so badly at home last year, and you know, I got to think the team's got to have a little concern about, man, Chicago came to town and handled us.
It's weird. You know, this team, they were road warriors to start the season, and you have to think you're pretty pumped up. Going back home, you're in first place, and you got to be feeling good about yourself. And, yeah, other than managing the scratch out a win last night, it was just a lost week for the Railroaders. We do have to say, though, good news on the for rookie first baseman Ryan Hernandez as his contract was transferred to the Los Angeles Angels after going hitting .319 with 5 homers and 15 RBIs and 47 at-bats. So I'm good for him. I think he's going to do some good stuff in the Angels organization. And, you know, that's what this league's all about, too. It's just some, you know, there wasn't partner leagues. Ryan Hernandez went undrafted, unnoticed, and, you know, where would he play if we didn't have leagues like this? So, you know, good luck to him with the Angels, and hopefully someday his dreams will come true and he'll be a major leaguer, and we'll see. I can remember that Thursday afternoon in Sioux Falls when that guy hit his first professional homer.
Yes, you can. They're taking on the Sioux City Explorers to start this week, a 4-game set. It is 3-3 here in the, I think it was the 6th inning, the last I saw. 7th inning now is where it's at, as they're speaking for a 4-game set. And then they travel on to Kansas City. Man, talk about a team needing to start to kind of turn things around. And the week does not look like a very bright one for them.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, we've seen how well this team performed against Milwaukee. So, you know, Milwaukee's a tough ball club. So I think there's enough talent on this Railroaders team to get things righted. I thought Evan Hatfield was a good sign last night that Ryan Smith threw very well in getting the win against the Dogs, giving up only one run in 5 hits in 7 innings. You know, a guy that was a former major leaguer, he's been rocked in 2 starts, but he's looked very good in the other 2. So, got to hope the Railroaders get more consistency out of him, and maybe that will get things going in general with his pitching staff.
My apologies for interrupting there for a moment, Kevin. Let's jump to the Gary Southshore Railcats. Second place in this division. They have already won the first game of their doubleheader here tonight over Milwaukee. Gary drops their first series of the season after winning their first 4 when they had lost the first game of the series and came back to win each of the last 2. They dropped the first 2 to King County Friday and Saturday night. Had the opportunity. They were up leading on Saturday, and the bullpen couldn't hold that game. And then they wound up coming away with a tight winning game on Sunday. Still, very, very good club. I think they're losing the nightcap. Did they lose the nightcap? Yeah, lost the nightcap here tonight 4-1 to Milwaukee. But just a very well-rounded team right now, Kevin, and showing that they're a team that can battle it out. They can grit with you. They win games, though. I mean, when they win, they win. And when they lose, is the wide way. I think they've only had 1 game of 2 runs or fewer that was the deciding factor. So, you know, this is going to be a team that's going to beat you bad, or they're going to get beaten down, it looks like, on most nights.
Yeah, it's kind of an oddity, you know. You can't really explain that one. You know, looking at their stats thus far this season, I guess the things that stick out to me, LJ Castile is off to a tremendous start, batting .356. But Sam Abbott, you know, the guy we were high on after breaking the single-season home run record with the Railcats, has struggled, going 5-for-24 and only 1 home run thus far. So, got to wonder if they're waiting for Abbott to get back on track and help spark this offense a bit.
It looks like he's battling for playing time too, Kevin, because there's so many guys that are playing fairly well for this group that they, you know, he's having to prove himself to get on the field, which is good. You know, I think that kind of competition really helps. And coming back to LG Castillo, had a 14-game hitting streak this season to start the year. It actually dated back to last season that he had 16 straight games that he had hit in. But a guy you and I aren't really talking about LG Castillo very much, but man, proving himself to be a formidable guy in this Gary Southshore Railcats lineup.
Gary Southshore, it's just a team in this league that just, I don't know if it's just because they're kind of, I believe they're the most eastern team. Granted, you know, you're just barely east of Chicago, but for some reason, I think a lot of times we just forget about this team because it's not flashy like many of the other clubs, but then you get a guy like Castile, it's just putting up tremendous numbers, but still somehow he kind of slips under the radar.
Boy, this bullpen, too, is just freaking ridiculous right now for this group. I mean, Jack Eisenberger has been great for them coming out of the bullpen. I think, what do we got here? Five guys out of this bullpen have ERAs under three. Anthony Phillips just above that. I think it's Aaron Phillips. I think I'm getting my St. Paul Saint reference in there. Aaron Phillips, Joan Valdez has pitched very well for them. This is a very deep bullpen, and when you have that, you're going to compete in games. And so this, if they can keep this group fresh, we saw last year, Kevin, they were phenomenal early on, and then they struggled around the All-Star break and you know, faltered after that. They just, I guess, were kind of worn down a little bit, but. Lamar Rogers had an opportunity to work for these guys now with these guys for a little over a year. And I would assume he knows exactly what he wants out of the staff. So this is a team that's in it for the long haul because this bullpen is, I think, arguably the best in the league right at this point.
It's been an interesting beginning of the season for Jack Eisenberger because if you look at his pitching lines, he did start one game in Kane County, and that would have been on Saturday night, gave up two runs and three and a third, and that is the only runs he's given up all year. He's had, six outings out of the bullpen in which he's not been scored on and has only given up three hits. So, yeah, even on one day rest, he came in and pitched 1.1 innings against Milkman, earning a hold in game one of that doubleheader. So, and you know, I can see it too. Maybe it was Eisenberger's day to throw on the side, or you know, who's to tell what Lamar Rogers is thinking? If Eisenberger's just going to stay in the pen and now it's just a one-time deal, or what the thinking right now is with him. But boy, it's been a good start for Eisenberger.
The Milwaukee Milkmen split their doubleheader tonight with Gary, Kevin. They've a club like Cleburne struggling a little bit. Got out of the gate very fast. We're playing very well now, 3-7 in their last 10. Find themselves 4.5 games behind Chicago in this division. It's the pitching. I think both of us looked at this and thought this bullpen is going to be lights out this year, but they have really struggled for this group.
You know, Gally Gums. Do we know, you know, I'm just looking at the stats right here. Am I mistaken? Do I not even see Peyton Gray on
among he just came off the injured list. Yeah, just came off the injured list.
Maybe that's a guy that can provide a spark then to what's looking like a pretty beleaguered bullpen at this point, which is contributing to a 5.5 staff ERA.
Yeah, they're getting decent starting pitching, Kevin. You know, look at Ryan Zimmerman at 3.63, Frankie Bartow at 3.85. Christian Young was fantastic this weekend in his last start, 3.93. But then you look deep down in that bullpen, and there's some guys that are getting hammered right now, and they already made a couple of moves to release guys at this point. Very, very un-Milwaukee-like we've seen in the Anthony Barone era with this team, and I'm sure, he's another guy who's not afraid to make moves when he's got to make them. So, with the offense getting, you know, I don't think this group has really come around to into form yet. This Ventura and Morales have been the dominant guys for this group. They need some pitching, and you're getting great starting pitching. Just as bullpen is not holding leads for them.
That's why I find, you know, the Milwaukee lineup itself, it's been a little alarming that, you know, as like Drew Ward and Miguel Gomez are off to a very slow start this season. And, you know, Drew Ward, last season he was off to a really, really good start. When he got injured and then came back, he was just never the same offensive force. And you got to wonder if his timing's just off or he's not healthy yet, or what's going on with that, because he's not putting up Drew Ward like numbers thus far.
You know, and traditionally, Kevin, Milwaukee's been a little bit of a tough place for guys who've had exceptional careers all of a sudden find that they're struggling hitting there. You know, Keon Barnum had a great season last year, but that wasn't the Keon Barnum we saw in Chicago either. And I understand he battled some injuries, but Zach Naryer didn't have a great year hitting there. Kay Simpson played just a few games before he got hurt. But a lot of times you see some of those batting. I mean, Jose Saramo didn't have a great year playing in Milwaukee. Maybe that's a little bit tougher park to hit in than we know. And so some of these guys are just off to a tough start, like Drew Ward, because he's just not used to hitting there. So it'd be interesting, I guess, to kind of evaluate that. But Franklin Bayless,
and Brett Walker never seemed to have trouble with it.
No, he didn't. You're very true about that.
Well, Kevin, let's talk about Roy Morales playing regularly and putting up huge numbers. You know, Morales, I don't know what Morales is doing in this league. He batted 300 in AAA last year for St. Paul and got released. And I just don't get how another major league organization sees a 300 hitter at the AAA level and not raise their eyebrows and think, hey, maybe we need to bring this guy in. And from all I've heard about Morales, I've heard he's just a great person in general. And I just don't get, a guy can catch, he can play first base. I don't get why a major league organization is not taking a flyer on him.
Yeah, as a catcher, too. I mean, everybody says this guy calls an incredible game. He's great at blocking pitches in the dirt. You're hitting 300. You hit 300 in St. Paul, which is a decent hitter's park, but it's not like it's, Chicago here. I mean, the dog's park where it's a little easier to hit a home runs or something. This guy's just a solid player all the way around. But major league organizations, Kevin, we've never come to understand them. So I guess this is another great example for us. Well, let's talk about Kane County. They got off to a very tough start, Kevin. Little concern about where this club is going, but they wind up after losing the first two games in Winnipeg, they come back to win the final game of that series and win two in Gary South Shore before losing on Sunday. They have won tonight by beating Lake Country 3-1. Pitching staff starting to come around. The starters are starting to look a little bit better for them, and we're starting to see some offense. Jimmy Kerrigan finally got off the schneid a little bit there. So maybe we're starting to see the turnaround for this group.
I think so, and I think we talked about with Joe Calfapietra with Monarchs. I think George Samson's probably looking at a similar situation where the Cosmos hitting 104, Kerrigan's hitting 161. But I mean, how do you give up on a guy that's a former big leaguer and a guy that, in our eyes, was the player of the year last year? It's tough as a manager, but you have to stay patient and hope that things are going to turn around. I mean, the offense right now is, we're talking about lineups on other teams where you got 7-8 guys with more than 10 runs are batted in, and there's only one with Kane County, and that's Cornelius Randolph with 11 RBIs hitting 310 off to another really good start. But T.J. Bennett, a guy who tore up the Australian Winter League for home runs last year, he's only got one home run. And granted, we know where they play. It's a tough hitter's park, but, you're only playing half a game there, so at some point, you got to think that T.J. Bennett's going to provide some power. Josh Allen, in only 8 games, has 2 home runs to be in a tie for the team lead in home runs. So, the potential's there. It's just going to – Samus is going to have to be patient with this ball club. And, if it just gets to the point where he just doesn't think things are going to happen with some of these guys, you – have to make that tough call and bring in someone else.
Yeah, T.J. Bennett and Jimmy Kerrigan homer in the same contest, both their first home runs of the season. And Kerrigan, if people haven't seen out there, that was quite a shot that he had. I mean, they were talking about that. It looked like it was going to – I could have cleared the track, the railway that comes by there. It just blasted so deep. So he's got the power for that part, but – the one thing they are getting, Kevin, is some outstanding performances from the pitching staff, especially the starting rotation. Weston Muir now up to 8-0 in his professional career. Jack Fox has won both of his starts this season, won 2 of his 3 starts, I should say. Tyler Beardsley has looked very good for this club. They're getting, I think, solid pitching all the way around. Even the bullpen has been very good, with the exception of Luke Westfall. And he's another guy, Kevin, a vet guy, so he's being paid a lot of money. You got to start thinking that George Samus is going to be looking at this pretty soon and go, my veterans are costing me a lot of money and really not contributing here. I might need to make some changes here pretty soon with these guys.
You have to think at some point you could see major league teams cutting some guys that would fill veteran roles in this league. And, you know, obviously you don't ditch plan A unless you have a plan B, but the plan B is going to have to be somebody that's going to be better than Luke Westfall. You hope that for his sake as a player that he can get it together, but right now he's, you know, it looks like he's about the only dark spot in that pitching staff right now.
Yeah, very much so. Dropping to Lake Country, Kevin, they win their first victory. They win their first game under their new manager. Paul Wagner took over the club last Tuesday, then dropped the next four. They come back to win the finale against Kansas City yesterday, and they lost tonight against Kane County. 2-5 under their new manager. Both of us were still a little stunned by that move. I still don't really understand the move right now, but pretty much where they were at before, they decided to make a move here. And Lake Country, I hope this doesn't wind up being another sad season for this team, because I great fan base out there, great ballpark. Really want to see this kind of team turn it around. But everybody's, I mean, when Milwaukee is struggling in here, and you know they're going to turn things around, there's not a lot of I think, because you got to feel like King County, Cleburne, Milwaukee are going to start to turn things around pretty soon. Gary and Chicago are all playing well. This could be another very tough year in Oconomowoc.
No doubt, and it seems like when they named Paul Wagner the interim manager, they won his first game under him. When they named Ken Huckabee as their new manager, that he won his first game. So maybe they just need to keep changing managers every game, and because they always seem like they perform well for their first game, but then it goes down from there. You know, my feelings on the whole situation with Jim Bennett, when Huckabee was named, I got on the Google machine and did some research on him. As far as I can tell, unless he was a roving coordinator or something of that sort, Huckabee has not managed since 2019. He was supposed to be the manager for the Buffalo Bison in 2020, but when the minor league season got shelved, he obviously didn't manage, and then he was let go during the offseason. But I listened to his introductory press conference with the Bison. And just for what he preaches as a manager, and just for the way he is as a person, he might be the right fit for what Lake Country is looking for. Will it turn around the club? Well, you know what? The guys still have to have the talent to make that happen. But I believe Huckabee can create a culture in Lake Country that may, in more of a long-term view, develop something good for that ball club. So I know we're both very fond of Jim Bennett, and I know neither of us understand the decision, but you know, let's give Huckabee a chance and let's see what he can do with this.
I agree with you completely. You know, we're always open-minded here at This Week in the Association, Kevin, so no worries about that. Let's quickly jump around the other leagues out there, starting with the Frontier League. They named their pitcher and player of the week today as well, the Jackals. Keon Barnum, a guy that we know quite well, we were mentioned a little bit ago, winds up being player of the week for New Jersey. And in Quebec, Jack Dellinger, I believe that is said, winds up earning the pitcher of the week after tossing seven shutout innings. Keon Barnum with three homers last week. So congratulations to Keon. Transactions out there, there wasn't anything major in terms of former American Association players, so we won't really dive into that. And we will also say that going around the standings out there, Gateway leading at 11-4 in the West Division with a one-game advantage over the Evansville Otters. And in the East, it is the Sussex County Miners at 10-4. holding a 2.5 game lead, a 3-game lead, they're claiming now, over the New York Boulders. So that's your Frontier League. Out in the Atlantic League, it is Long Island at 17-11, holding a 1-game advantage over the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs in the north, and the High Point Rockers running away. Them and Gastonia are neck and neck in the south, but after that, it's quite a stretch. A 5.5 game lead for Gastonia in second place over Lexington, who's in third. So looks like it's going to be a battle for first or second in here in this division, and then everybody else is going to be playing out the season right now. So, Kevin, before we jump into the final thought here tonight, let's talk about a couple things out there. So first, returning back to broadcasting for a moment, you and I saw a very interesting release tonight that Dan Vaughn was talking about, that the Northwoods League decided to not allow broadcasters to use Mixlr to broadcast their games. And it seems like there's just this tendency now in leagues to start shutting down essentially road broadcasts for clubs. You and I have talked about this a little bit over the last year. These are just surprising moves that just don't make sense when you look at them.
I'm not really understanding this. Just like the players that go into the Northwoods League that need to get used to the minor league lifestyle, being on the road, being responsible, getting to your room on time, taking care of yourself so you're ready to play. Well, you know what? The broadcasters need to learn that, too. They need to learn to go on the road and go to the visitor's press box, get your radio set up ready, do your game prep work, communicate with the home team broadcaster, and put together a broadcast to send back home. And I just don't get what this helps in the long run by taking it all away from these guys. There's talk that some of their games are going to be ESPN Plus exclusives, and they don't want any other broadcast of it. And I don't know, to me that just seems ludicrous, because any other game that's on ESPN, so if NHL games on ESPN, do the home and road teams not get to have a radio broadcast? It doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, there's so many guys that want to get in this broadcast business, and sometimes you're, because of stuff like this, they're gonna get a professional job and just be ill prepared for it, and in the long run that does not do any of us any good.
Yeah, and your ultimate goal, I would think, for any league out there, and it's one thing where the American Association, I think, has really set themselves head and shoulders above everybody else, is your ultimate goal is to make sure that everybody at every level of your organization has an opportunity to thrive and reach the next level they want to get to. And I mean, think about what we're getting right now. You know, you had we're seeing broadcasters from this league go on to broadcast single and double and double A baseball all around. Steve Schuster's playing, you know, doing stuff for the New York Mets in stats analysis that he wanted to do there. And you want to promote these guys so they have the opportunity to get other opportunities that they really want for themselves. And it seems like this Northwoods League is just throwing that down the toilet for their broadcasters. Plus your brand, Kevin, like, people don't care about what's going on with your team. I guess that's what they're really saying is, well, your team went to the road, so it doesn't matter what they're doing now.
You know, as someone that has followed the Northwoods League since the beginning, I find it frustrating in the games that I go to now that I can't go to, maybe there is a team, I think maybe Lacrosse does radio yet, maybe not. Maybe I think even they might have gone to MixLR. But I like going to a ballpark and slapping the headphones on and listening to the home broadcast and learning a little bit about the players that I have not seen play all year. To me, that just makes it where I can enjoy the game a little bit more. But, boy, if you only listen to half the games, it just hurts the overall experience of it.
100% agreement with you. Also, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about offensive numbers in the league this season. The last couple of years have clearly been crazy in terms of the kind of home runs and runs scored that we have seen. Those numbers falling this season, we're not going to have Josh Altman, I think, is the only guy with a shot who's going to be competing for the most home runs in the season, and that's probably going to fall short. But we're not going to have 230 home run hitters this season. I mean, I just don't see that happening. We're not going to have a guy driving 106 runs. It looks like the league is evening out finally. We're starting to see a little bit better pitching. I think that's better for the league, to be honest with you. 11-10 games get a little monotonous after a while. I think this is the way that really promotes the league in the right way. And I'm curious your thoughts about, is this just a matter of we're not seeing the same offensive talent, we're seeing better pitching talent? Is the pitch clock affecting this at all? Guys are getting more in rhythm or thing. What do you kind of attribute this to right now?
I just think there's just more pitching out there in general, because with the pandemic, a lot of guys just didn't get to throw, didn't get to be competitive the whole year. And I just think it needed so many years removed from that for, you know, there was guys in the last few years that come out of college are ready to pitch. There's guys that missed that year. They're probably on a taxi squad or something, not getting to pitch competitively, where now they've got 2 years where they've pitched competitively again and are matched up better against the batters. So I think it took a lot longer for the pitchers to get back to normal and to get numbers built up where teams can get a good pitching staff than it took for the batters to get back in their games again.
Yeah, I think that's very logical conclusion out there. And it's better for the game. You know, it really is. I understand people like the big home run numbers and want to see a guy chasing those kind of things. But it can make for a very long night at games when you're watching 13 guys walk in a contest or something, and it's 18-12 by the seventh inning. So this looks like this is what we really want out there, and so I'm happy to see it. So back to a little normalcy here, Kevin, I think. Well, on that note, before we jump into the final thought, Kevin, I would assume since we're getting into June, does that mean that next week the Kevin Lukow Power Rankings, the official true power rankings of the American Association, will pop out next week?
I don't think so. I think we're going to wait till like the 30-game mark, because, you know, you look at the league did them, and who was their number one team going into the week? It was the Cleveland Railroaders, and they go ahead and drop 5 out of 6. So I just think there's still too much fluctuation. I think you need to get to like the 30-game mark before they really, truly start making sense. So folks have just got to settle for my Sunday insiders for a few more weeks yet before we start doing the power rankings.
I like it anyway. Sounds good. Cleburne and Sioux City, by the way, here we are in the bottom of the ninth, tied at 3. And Lincoln looks like they're going to come away extending their lead over Kansas City to 6 here in the top of the 7th. And that leads us into the Kevin Lukow final thoughts.
Well, it's going to be a two-parter. The first part, I was covering my local town ball team yesterday, and as the 14-inning game wrapped up, I was up in the press box writing my game story, and I thought, well, okay, well, the game's over. I could turn the volume up on Sioux City and Lincoln, and what do I hear? Connor Ryan calling the game. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Did Connor Ryan come back altogether? Did they accidentally play a game from last year? What is going on here? Well, it took till post game for me to find out that it's for Wednesday and Sunday games, it's going to be a two-man booth of Connor Ryan and Dan Vaughn. And I got to tell you, folks, it was a very fun listen to have two of the premier broadcasters that this league has had sharing a booth together. And it's going to be fun to listen to these guys call games together throughout the summer. So it's good to hear that Connor Ryan is going to be back, albeit on a limited basis. But, you know, our good friend Dan Vaughn, he can handle it. So you know, those two days with Connor will be just enough where they can share the calls. But, you know, love Connor Ryan's voice on the air, so it's neat to have two legends on at the same time with Dan Vaughn and Connor Ryan. My second thought, not as positive. Today is Memorial Day. Rob, what's the purpose of Memorial Day?
To honor those who have sacrificed themselves for our country.
Does that mean buying 4 cases of beer and 3 bottles of liquor and getting drunk for 3 days?
No, it does not. It does not mean that whatsoever, Kevin.
Does it mean going out and buying like $200 worth of food and grilling and just having a party?
No, it's not intended to be a family weekend where you were grilling and sitting out of the swimming pool all the time. I mean, that's okay, but that's not what it was intended for.
Memorial Day has just become just another one of those holidays that it was all about just a 3-day weekend and start of summer and going out and partying and going to the lake and whooping it up and not thinking about the true reason for Memorial Day. Hey, you know what? If you want to have a grill out on a Sunday afternoon because you don't have to work on that Monday, so be it, but let's remember the reason for the holiday. To me, a picture I saw last week really defines what it means to some families. There's a picture I saw of a woman and her young child sitting on a picnic blanket near the gravesite of her fallen husband. Do you think she's going out whooping it up and having a great time? No, she misses her husband terribly. And to me, that just really, it really hit home to me as to really what this weekend is all about. And for those people that went out and saw parades today and went to the services to remember those who have fallen, you have my respect. But for those that just saw this as a 3-day party weekend, do better. And you know, if you see a vet, thank them. If you see somebody out in front of the store selling poppies, buy a poppy. They're only wanting a dollar or two. Just buy a poppy. Be a good person. Let's remember, everything you get to do, you get to do it because there was somebody who fought for your right to be able to do it. And in a lot of cases, fought and gave up their lives in the line of duty for you to have the freedoms that you have today. So while you're living your life, doing your usual routine, sometimes take a step back and let's be a little more grateful for those who have defended our country and defended our freedoms and sometimes, unfortunately, have lost their lives in the line of duty in doing so.
You know, Kevin, it's not like you have to think back and go, well, we're trying to honor people way back when World War II. There have been people over the last 20 years that were fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan and who lost their lives. And so some probably within this year. So there's plenty of reasons to be memorializing those out there who have lost their life for this country. So I'm with you, 100% on board. Well, once again, Kevin and I want to thank David Feldman for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next week. So for Kevin Loco, I'm Rob Pannier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.